Here we are. Right on time.
We are locked and loaded for an exciting episode.
Welcome, everyone, to the Bad Infinite Friends podcast, episode 19, the big Nordic Weasel Games AMA. You guys ask questions, and we're going to speak them out.
Yeah, we're going to say things, and then we're going to answer questions. Yeah, yeah. And if we're lucky, they are even the same questions that were asked.
So I'm going to read out the questions, and I'm going to do it in a very preposterous tone, because as I read through the questions, I couldn't do it any other way.
Yeah, yeah. You got to elevate the discussion a little bit. We're trying to be professionals here.
Yeah. I'm gonna treat everyone as if they are a Hambutt, and I'm going to do my best Hambutt impression, basically.
Yeah. So he will appreciate that.
Yeah.
Except I have no idea what he actually sounds like, so maybe he doesn't sound like...
What I'm going to sound like? I think he does, though. You know, in my heart, that's what it says, so...
This is true. The real Hambutt is the voices we made along the way.
And anyone else who listens to this can just imagine this is Hambutt's voice from this point on. I think it's going to work well.
And if there are additional questions that come into the chat, we don't really know how many people are going to show up in the chat. If there's a couple, we'll try to grab them in between. But if there's a lot, we will just track them and probably do a follow-up.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll pause basically after every question before I read it out if things have popped up.
Yes. We are on a pretty strict time limit because Dave has to go do stuff.
Yeah,
and my phone will die anyway. So we got a set time frame. So if there's too many questions, we will grab them for a future episode.
Yeah, yeah, we can do them in the next one. Mm-hmm. With that all being said, I'm going to pull up the questions, and I will start with the very first one. Now.
And I did not prepare them in advance, so you get the unfiltered, which means the answers will all be confused garbage.
And the questions are all written as if I am asking them anyway, so I think that's why I just created a voice for them. All right, here we go.
Tom says he has a fine northern UK accent, so you know how to do a northern UK accent, right?
Yeah, well, tell me if this is close, Tom. I was thinking on this earlier when going through the Patreon posts. How often do you look back through and adapt or pull from your old rules and ideas when developing new content?
Okay, now that is definitely what I think Hambutt sounds like. So the question is how often? That's an okay amount of time. When you've done stuff for a long time, and there's especially for we've always done little bits of create a new creature or create a new scenario, stuff like that, you get this massive back catalog of stuff and ideas. Often there's a level of idea that is fine for putting on on Patreon or putting on the Discord or something like that, but it's not built out enough where you would put in a book, right? So some of those you can grab, the salvage rules were originally a little standalone. They got expanded out to become a proper proper scenario for 5 parsecs. I wouldn't say it's a priority to pull up old things, but it is definitely a source. A lot of times it's something that, you get a chance to go back and grab an old idea and do it over or do it differently or do it you just have a new look on it, a new idea for it. So yeah, sometimes I do generally prefer doing new stuff, but I would say over the years, a fair amount of stuff has come back. If you got the Five Leagues compendium, some of the stuff in there are things that were originally, expansions for the second edition, but they've been reimagined or updated or things like that. So yeah. So often enough, but not quarter of the time.
And do you prefer to begin something completely from a blank page instead of adapting an old idea?
Often, yes, because I just get bored retreading terrain too much. It's one of those things where, especially when you do stuff like Squad Hammer or something, where it's you're rebuilding the same thing over and over, and that is really fun to do, but at some point you also get oh my god, I need to do something different, get the D12s out or something. So yeah, I would say like 2/3 of the time it's something brand new, or at least new enough that I haven't thought about in a while, and 1/3 of the time it's like an old idea can be like really vague, because sometimes you know, you thought about something, you tinkered with it, but it never went anywhere, and then you think about it again like half a year later, it's like, oh okay, now it works. So okay, so you got a request for do the next one in the Danish accent, which is fine.
You know, I still sometimes think about trying to say your phrase. What was it? Or short garnishnor? There we go. Of course,
will. Yeah, the problem is I can barely do a Danish accent, so.
We never said actually hello to who's here. We should say hello to Noist, who's eating supper. Bon appetit. We are saying hello to Tom Kennish, who is Psychic Hazard. He directed us that Hambit has a fine Northern UK accent, and he says close-ish, which means that I'm nearly perfect, I think.
I think we're going to round that one up.
And everyone's favorite Torben has arrived. So good to see you.
He is having some quote.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what you eat before bed, right?
You can eat it kind of anywhere.
Oh,
so dang. You shouldn't be let down by the rules telling you when you can't have tasty desserts.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so the next question will be, how do you decide what does make it into a new rule book or expansion? Do you have established themes for yourself at the beginning and try to bring aspects that connect and build around that? Or do you prefer to begin with a few unconnected ideas, and while developing them, a theme grows naturally and connects them?
I assume this question is like in the meaning of like a 5 parsecs expansion. Usually there's like a thin theme, because it makes it easier to like, you got to call it something and it makes it easier to sort of, you know, you have a starting point. But the theme doesn't have to like control everything. So a lot of times it's like, if the theme was, you know, is a particular thing, maybe a 1/4 of the stuff in the book kind of ties to that. For the Leaks compendium, it was kind of the opposite way around, where there was a bunch of material because we wanted to do this big fat supplement, and then it turned out a bunch of it was related to like the map and traveling, so that became the theme. But usually there is a theme starting out. If it's a smaller like indie expansion for something, then yeah, there's always a theme to it. I do like doing sort of disjointed like rules packs where it's just like random rules and bits you could use, but I don't know if people necessarily like those. I think they appeal to like a specific kind of, like if you're the person who likes to like tinker with the game and make it your own game, I think that appeals, but I think having themes and ideas kind of like connects more to people. So most of the time there is at least a basic theme, and then if some of it doesn't connect to that theme, that's okay. Now that we have like actual artists and stuff, it also helps, because, you know, it's easier for the artist if they have like an idea to work with. So, and it's easier to say, okay, can we have like 10 pictures of guys like traveling in mountains or something?
Oh, yeah. The hiking game.
Yeah. There was an old Avalon Hill board game called, I think, Wilderness Survival or something, where you just like walk around like on a map and try to like not starve to death. It's impossible to win that game.
Oh yeah, it's the Oregon Trail of board games.
Yeah,
nice. All right, so the next question. Also, who's going to win the women's Euros?
Well, I assume because the AMA happened after the finale, this refers to the next time, and in that case, it is 100% going to be Germany.
Ooh!
So I'm calling it now. Place your bets.
And who was it this time?
It was England, actually.
Oh, okay, nice.
So yeah, so my family has always had the rule when I was a kid that you support Denmark, and then when Denmark inevitably bombs out or doesn't qualify, you support whichever Scandinavian team is still around. And when they inevitably bomb out, then you individually pick your choice of Germany or England. For me, it was always Germany. So nobody I supported got anywhere, but it was still good. But next time, 100% Germany.
Ooh. All right. Yeah, it's kind of like my town. We have a hockey team, and our rivals are the town up north. And in the NHL, inevitably, one team might do better than the other. So you're not allowed to root for the other team until the one loses. Oh, once you're out of the playoffs, for sure. Then you can root for the next team. Then you're allowed.
Yeah. So you guys, you guys also have the Cavalry.
Yeah. But I think I don't know if there's more than one soccer team in Alberta. So,
No, not pro. There's the Cavalry, and then there's whatever the women's one is.
Okay. Yeah, the Wild.
Oh, yeah.
Wild. Okay. Next question. When can we see an Inquisitor 28 style game set in Unity?
That is an excellent question. The answer is maybe. I have sung the idea to the overlords that some sort of advanced 5 parsecs would be really cool. They are open to that, but so far have been unconvinced. So I'm sure like 50 weirdos emailing them about it would change their opinions. I really want to do an Inquisitor 28 style game, something that is only has like a couple of characters, like 3 or 4, and has maybe not as much like detail as Inquisitor, but like in that vibe. So like hit locations and, you know, very specific, like if I'm in cover, it protects my arm and left leg or whatever, you know, that kind of vibe, and probably geared towards like playing with a game master the way Inquisitor was. So that's something I really want to do. I have this long list of future ideas that I look at every week or so and remove one or add one, and that's been on there forever. So I want to do one. I don't know 100% if it would be set in Unity, because that depends on whether the overlords want to make one. I think it could sell, but there's always like a risk with when it's something that kind of doesn't exist on the market. It's like a big gamble when you have to put up like, you know, $5,000 worth of artwork or whatever. Yeah, those glossy books, they don't come cheap. So luckily I don't have to pay for the art, but that also means I have to make the case. So yeah, I would really like to do one. It's something I bring up every now and again, but we'll see if that happens.
So. Okay. Okay, this one is a bit of a tongue twister for me. I think this is why I ended up doing the preposterous voice, because I have to think about it a little more when I do the voice, and then I kind of process the words a little better. Right. Any plans for Unity tie-in fiction?
See, that was pretty good. That definitely sounds like the character that is like the asshole on like a period drama. Like he's the evil nephew or something.
Yeah, Lord Hamlet. We got it.
Yeah. Did some questionable stuff, but nobody knows for sure. plans as in this is definitely something we've talked about? No. I don't think it's something that we're really looking at right now. The big issue is mostly that I do like writing fiction, but I only like writing fiction like a little bit. So once I'm through like 3 pages, I'm like, okay, this idea is boring and I want to do something different. I could see some sort of short story collection. I think that could be pretty fun because it would be a cool way of like showcasing a bunch of like weird stuff, right? And it could also happen as a like a submission thing where people create little short stories and maybe they get compiled together, but that means somebody has to organize it and I'm better at organizing. So at the moment, no plans. Could happen, but 15% chance, I would say.
I do remember there was a fellow on Facebook who wanted to write fiction for Unity.
Yeah, and I'd seen somebody else, like a couple of people, some of the blog people kind of get there anyway because they're writing about their games and they start like writing out like a whole thing about the characters and stuff. So it's the real big question is because there's Unity as it exists in your game. And then there's Unity as it exists in my head. And those aren't the same thing. And they're not meant to be. So you kind of have like, it's like early Warhammer or early Star Wars before they published like 2000 fucking novels.
Yeah. Back when it was perfectly valid to have Sherlock, Obi-Wan, Clouseau.
Right. Like, so it can be kind of anything. Like, because in your Unity, they might be like the oppressive, you know, dystopian society. And in another person's Unity, they're like, you know, the people who save you from like the face-eating aliens.
So,
and there's a lot of those things where like I have an idea of what they are and some of them will get revealed and some of them may not be. That's just kind of So once you do, like, that's the thing. Like, if I put, if there's like a collection of short stories and I have my names on them, whether they're better or worse, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm an okay fiction writer, but there's people who are obviously like 1,000 times better than me. But people are going to look at the things in that story and they're going to put like an official like mindset. Like, if I say that this is how this alien race does things, then suddenly that's like nailed down. So there's like a risk there.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's somebody else, people are going to maybe approach it more just for like whether the story is good or not, or, you know. So there's just more that goes into it than just like creating a story. But yeah, in theory, I would like to do it.
They never specified choose your own adventure, but what do you think? See,
that, yeah, that's something I've wanted to do for like literal years. Like back in the day when like Fighting Fantasy was a thing, I used to create my own. They were probably completely broken bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I absolutely want to do like a choose your own adventure type book at some point. So I guess nowadays, like the obvious question that everyone would ask is like, why isn't it an app? But I don't know. I don't want to make a fucking app.
Yeah.
Apps are stupid. Every time you use an app, your brain gets smaller. Like, yeah, literally. Exactly.
We need to preserve books. Tree murder traditions.
Absolutely. Print that shit out on your dot matrix printer and cheat in the old-fashioned way by holding your finger on the chapter you're at.
Well, on a related note, I finally bit the bullet and ordered a color laser jet printer. And I am super excited.
Yes. The best gaming purchase you can ever make is a laser printer.
Like, yeah. Barn. Color. Full color.
Those are expensive, but you only have to like once every millennia. So
yeah, I'm pawning it off on my work. So
okay.
You know, share some expenses here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the next question, what new genre would you like to write a game for?
So the one that I keep looking at is anything with like airplanes or spaceships, more so airplanes. I really want to do like a World War One like fighter pilot game with you, because it would fit with the whole campaign vibe of like following a pilot and stuff, and, you know, maybe following a whole squadron and you can have events and stuff. But yeah, anything with like planes, and I know anything with spaceships would be like super popular, whether it was an indie thing or whether it was a 5 Parsecs thing. So yeah, that's probably the big one. If it's genre as in like style of game, then I guess choose your own adventure. Although we do want to do more RPG stuff. We were just talking, me and my wife, about an idea for an RPG thing that I think could work. So part of it is being practical. You know, you want to like diversify your assets or some bullshit. And part of it is what sounds fun or what haven't we done.
Nice. Okay, next question. Which of your mechanics did you think was really cool, but it never caught on?
Well, there's the one that like never, like everyone got mad about because they didn't understand it, which means I probably didn't explain it well. The original 5-Men in Normandy had this rule called displacement. And the idea was if you see a figure for the first time in the game, then the one of the two figures that is not, that wasn't moving when they saw each other would be displaced 1d6 inches in a random direction. And the idea was that you don't know, you know that they are roughly in that area because that's where the model is, but you don't know exactly where they were. You might have told them to go over and like stand guard over by that fence, but they actually wandered off a bit to go check something out, or they misunderstood it or something. And everyone like absolutely hated it because it meant that their dude was suddenly like in the open when he shouldn't have been or whatever. So I would like to think that he was like too clever for the plebs, but it was actually just probably just a stupid idea. So that one sticks out. Other than that, like all of the Unity Field Agent game just like didn't go anywhere. There was a lot of like clever design in it, with like how to do cards, how to do multiple actions. It solved a lot of issues, I thought, but maybe those weren't issues people actually had. It was just me being a weirdo. So that's a game that I want to resurrect at some point, because I think if it was, I also wonder if maybe we just like had the wrong like cover art. People thought it was something else than it was. Not from like the quality of the art, because it's a very cool piece. Just it didn't look like the game it actually was, which is on me. So yeah, that's probably it. Otherwise, like when you've been going long enough, you get to like hammer the same like the same nail with the same hammer like enough times. So eventually people just like get on board with it. Like a lot of people, I think, have subconsciously gotten on board with like the absolute timing ideas and stuff like that. So eventually you just like, it was funny the other day, people were talking about this, happened on the Facebook page as well, where after a while, people stopped complaining about not having like fireballs in five leagues, and people start defending it instead, because now they're now they've internalized that that's how the game works. So now it's like how it should be. So if you just do something long enough, people will like come around to it.
Yeah. It becomes, that's the reason why we do it now, because it's mm-hmm. different.
Exactly. The idea has become an institution.
All right, here comes, this is going to be a long run of Forgotten Ruin, these next few questions. So prepare yourselves.
Get ruined.
I found that Forgotten Ruin's design was more streamlined and easy to follow as far as story building is concerned. That somehow it worked better. Do you think that what you did in Forgotten Ruin was possible because of the global storytelling ambition may be lesser in Forgotten Ruin than in 5 parsecs or 5 leagues?
Yeah, so with Forgotten Ruin, had two things that have sort of came first. The first is obviously that it was like a very specific story. It has to be about a bunch of army rangers and they have to fight like D&D dudes. And the second was that I decided very early on that in order to feel like a mission, because the book is, you know, like it's not a big book. So there was a very distinct feeling of like a starting and end point. So I decided very early on that it was going to only run for whatever, 10 or 11 battles. And then the campaign is done, which is something we hadn't done before. You can finish a 5 leagues campaign, but it's like long.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, once you have those two things in place, then the rest of it, because then there's certain things you can't do. You can't have the like very open-ended quest structure of 5 leagues, because that can rely on something going on for 6 or 7 games, which you can't do if you only have like 11 to work with. So yeah, it probably becomes, some things just don't exist in Forgotten Ruin, which makes it more streamlined, but it meant that some of those things had to be moved somewhere else. So like if you look at the scenario, there's maybe more things and events that can happen during a battle instead of where in leagues they would happen, like in the campaign structure. So yes, the core ideas of what Forgotten Ruin had to be basically caused the rest of the changes, which sounds very clever. It's not nearly as clever as it sounds like. But if you set up like the parameters, if you're like designing something and you like set up in advance what the boundaries and what the limits are, then yeah, it'll help you sort of guide you, because then you'll suddenly realize you have to do certain things differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like when you're shopping and you're a big guy, so mm-hmm. your clothes options are very small in most places. So you can go to an average store and be like, okay, I can choose between these 5 shirts and these 3 pants.
Yeah.
Or you go to like a Mr. Big and Tall and you're like, okay, well, this whole store I can fit. So now I don't even know.
Yeah. Or it's like your doctor tells you need to eat more tomatoes. So now like your dinner options are going to be down a certain path.
Yeah.
You know,
all tomato related. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the next part of the question is, the champions versus villains design in Forgotten Ruin feels like a nice upgrade compared to the rival mechanism in 5 Parsecs. Do you plan on inserting such a design in 5 Parsecs or 5 Leagues?
No. Mostly because I prefer things to be separate. So, something being, there's obviously things that do recur in each. So, like, the system for, like, villains in Forgotten Ruin is like a cousin of how rivals work in Parsecs, and Leagues doesn't have anything like it. But I try to never have the same piece work like exactly the same or even recur. So no, they're not intended, but if we do a future book, then yeah, that might be another take on that idea. Like the idea of a normal enemy who comes back as like a more powerful one is like really cool, right? Oh. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it was because this was based on a book, so it felt like that was like a book thing to do. So no, not specifically, but yes, maybe. That's a very, very good
results answer. May vary.
Yeah.
All right. The next part. Sometimes the random table rolls do stack up in 5 leagues or 5 parsecs. Much less, or much more less so in Forgotten Ruin. Much more less so in Forgotten Ruin. and it's hard to figure out a story out of it. Do you plan on designing new mechanisms to bring more control over the long-term story?
Yes, maybe. No, possibly. So that's another of those things you can always experiment with, right? Because you can have... So the issue is that if you have, like, two or three random events happen each time, they do stack up a lot. And the games rely on you, like, piecing together how they make sense. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, one of our guys died, and now a different character has an event that sends us to a particular place to do something. And in your brain, you connect the two together and make a little story out of it. That's like the cheat of how these games work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not everything can fit like that. And sometimes something happens and it's just not a thing. You can corral that mechanically. So one solution might be to reduce or have more space between random events. Or to, like, specifically link them into things. Like, I know the solo RPG dudes do this a lot, where it's, like, you roll for, and something happens, and then you choose, like, a character you know, and they are connected to the thing that happens, and then you know. So you can scaffold it a little bit. So, yeah, that's stuff that we'll definitely experiment with. Reducing the overall randomness, that's one of those, like, difficult things, because, like, everyone has like a different opinion on that. One of the things that is important, I think, to understand is that 5 Parsecs, especially in 5 Leagues, largely are not role-playing games. They're miniatures games, right? So in a role-playing game, you would expect, for example, that like if you fight a certain kind of enemies, you would keep meeting similar enemies because that makes it more of a theme. But in a miniatures game, you want to like paint different dudes and have different tactical experiences. So they are more random than if they would have been if they were RPGs. That doesn't mean a future game has to. It's just that's the reason they are that way. So yes, we'll always keep experimenting with like how story mechanics work because that's really cool. But not necessarily. It could be more tightly controlled story, or it could even be less. Just do things differently.
Mm-hmm. I know, like, if you ever watch Bat Reps on 5 Parsecs from Home, it's interesting to see how people take on the idea of a random event that doesn't really fit their story.
Mm. Yeah,
like, some people will spend the story points and just re-roll.
Kind of ignore it. Some people will take it on. Some people just... There's also, like, a certain kind of player who's, like, they absolutely want to obey, like, every single die roll. Mm-hmm. Like, so, yeah, it's just... And part of it is, like, you figure out what the game means to you.
And if you want to see like a really beautiful representation of someone who rolls with the dice, basically. So whatever they get, they work it into the story. Mm-hmm. Trevor Duvall's were beautiful.
He really crafted
everything together. It's like, you know, if it doesn't make sense right now, there's probably still a reason why it happened. And we may discover that.
Yeah. And you can always like Star Trek it a little bit. Like some stories are just one-offs, you know, something happens and you can do a thing. But yeah, so it's always going to be... There's a range of open versus story drawn. So,
All right. So we're moving away from Forgotten Ruin now.
Yeah, a little bit.
Is there a plan for an expansion dealing with multiple war factions fighting for control territory, in which the players would have to play small but determining battles, depending on and influencing the bigger picture? Solo co-op in 5 Parsecs Tactics? Or Mystic Space?
Maybe, yeah. This is one of those things that I feel like has always existed, because there's like a certain group, you know. Even Warhammer and stuff like that, where you have like territories and the effect of the armies you can build. So, yeah, someday that would be fun to do. That might be something that fits better in Mystic Space, with the whole Flashpoint setup, where you like create your little planet and pick which factions are on that planet and fight over it. But yeah, that's... I think it probably works better as a post game versus a solo game, but I don't know, maybe. But yeah, definitely an idea that would be fun to do. Not specifically planned, but...
You once ruled the realms with dice and a sword, painted goblins till tea, then your minis were stored. You grew up, got a job, bought a flat, wore a tie, swapped dragons for deadlines... Your brushes went dry. Now the dishes are done and the kids are in bed. You climb to the attic to raise the undead. Crack open the paints that you swore you'd outgrown. the smell of acrylic. It feels like your home. There's grey in your beard, even more on your head, but you're splashing some colour on plastic and lead. So welcome back, General. What took you so long? Your hobby's still here. It's the place you belong. The Bedroom Battlefields Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Do you think there's a way out of leveling up characters? Characters' evolutions over the course of battles slash games allow tactical decisions to evolve and help keeping the battles varied and interesting. Do you think such evolutions are possible without leveling up the characters, avoiding power creep? Isn't leveling up a curse in RPGs and related games?
I will say in an RPG, if it is broken somewhere, leveling up is probably where it breaks, because a lot of games just get tested with starting characters. Yes, there is a way out, but I think what you need to do is allow players to make some changes. So you could have a game where you get new options available, but you have to get rid of something. So maybe you have 8 characters, and you get a new character who has a new cool ability, but you have to let go of somebody. Or you have a limit of 15 items in your party's inventory, and when you get new items, you have to get rid of something. I think something like that, so you can cycle things in, but you have to let go of something else, could work. Or you unlock options. So you have, I don't know, 5 spells when you start, but as you play the game, you get access to more spells. I think, yeah, you could do something. I also think, obviously, like, this question is, like, really specific to, like, campaign and warband-style games. There's no guarantee, you know, like, you could have a campaign game that isn't about that. You know, you can have a campaign game where it's different units fighting over control of, like, you know, some area or something. Where progression is progressing, you know, on the map, or progressing towards your goal, or just playing through the battles, like... So yeah, I think there's ways out of it, but I think the leveling on is also like so satisfying to people that there's definitely people who specifically look for games that has that. So yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a camp game without some sort of advancements.
It's more like for like military games, it's more of a thing. Yeah. Then you're like you're fighting for, your progression is that you capture the bridge, so now you can do the next mission or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, when I think about those kinds of games, I always think like attrition. It's like you start off strong and you're just getting weaker as you go along. So, you know, you're really pushing it at the end.
Last through until you get reinforcements or something. Like if you complete this mission, then you get some extra dudes or something. So, that's which is a kind of progression, but it's not based on like changing individual units or whatever.
I wonder if like adventuring fatigue would be a factor then to battle. If leveling up is one hand, then fatigue could be the other hand. So the longer you keep campaigning without like resting at an inn or whatever, then the more weaker you're going to get. And then
right off. Which ironically is a thing that is in some RPGs. You know, you have to, at some point you have to head back and rest up and get all your stuff upgraded or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Perfect. All right. Oh, Mr. Hambutt is here.
Oh.
Good day, sir.
Now the pressure is on.
All right. Do you prefer to leave similar storytelling mechanics distinct between each of your 5X games to keep the games more singular? Or would you merge them if you could if you could find a design is better than one another?
I think I already answered that, but yeah, I prefer to leave them separate. It's important to me that they are distinct games and not just reskins. Obviously, like, ideas carry over. Like, the way shooting works, basically, like, even if you forget the exact, like, target numbers or what counts to cover, you will be fine. But it's important for me that they are distinct. So this is why, like, Parsecs had, you know, points, you spend XP to buy skills or upgrades. Leaks, it's a random roll. You know, everything is just done a little differently. If they were all just reskins of the same thing, I would just not have fun with it. So that's a simple one.
Yeah. It's like army painting at that point.
Yeah. Like at some point, you just can't paint any more orcs.
All right. This one was a pretty cool question. taking this company as an example because I don't know another one doing what they do. Is it Loke or Loki? Loke battle mats?
I assumed it was Loki, but
We went with Loki. So from this point, I'll say Loki. If Loki battle mats was interested, would you design a dungeon crawler game allowing to use Loki battle mats dungeon books with a group of adventurers progressing through a continuous, never-ending series of rooms?
Yeah, that sounds like it would be super fun, actually. That's one of those examples of, like, creating something with a very specific restriction on it that would just be really fun. So, yeah, if anyone wants to make that happen, I don't know if they would be interested, but... but yeah, something like that would be really cool, because that's, like, a very, like, ready-to-play, you just, like, take out the little book and flip it to a page and fight monsters.
Yeah, it'd be pretty sweet. So, you have your rule book built in.
It would work really well if you had, like, a sheet with, like, tokens or counters with, like, monsters on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, so it's very travel-oriented.
Nice. Magnetic, perhaps? Ooh.
Yeah, could be.
Okay, what warrants design of a new game? Given that you already have several different rule sets in similar theme, what makes new set of rules strong enough to decide to make a new game out of it? Especially considering it could split your client base.
Well, if I was one of the smart guys who was worried about splitting the client base, I would probably have stopped making sci-fi skirmish games a hot minute ago. ultimately, what warrants the design of a new game is that I really want to. Now, sometimes it turns out that it's, like, too similar. There has to be, like, some identifying idea. And since people confuse these games all the time, maybe that idea is not always strong enough. But, yeah, it's just, like, a different vibe or a different thing. Like, when we did Shoot People in Space, it was very much intended to be, like, okay, what if a game, like, felt like playing Laserburn, but was actually, like, playable by humans? or, like, a game that, like, played the way that people's accounts of playing Laserburn sound, you know, which is different from, so it had like a very specific goal it wanted to do. But yeah, mostly it's just, I feel like the idea is strong enough to build a game out of, because a fun idea doesn't necessarily mean you can stick with it for like 80 or 100 pages, let alone like 200 or whatever. But yeah, it doesn't bother me that much that it's similar to something. I think that's one of those things where it's kind of like the hardcore fans, I think, appreciate the idea that you can examine the same idea in different ways. And I think some people get like confused by it. They want to know like which one is the right one, as opposed to just picking one and then spending time. I get it. It's just right now, that's just not how I think. So,
yeah, that's where everyone next requests the Bible of Nordic Weasel games.
Yeah. Like,
which game does what?
Yeah.
Why would I want to play this one?
Yes. I'm bad at things like that.
Yeah. But I mean, YouTubers often say that, like, the videos they make, sometimes you get like a onesie, so like a top video for no apparent reason. Like, all of a sudden, you're like, it was just a throwaway video you did because you were interested in doing the subject, but you didn't think anything of it. And then it becomes like your number one video. So throwing things out there sometimes is a tactic.
Yeah, you never know. And it's always been like the vibe of like, we don't do just one thing. It's not just solo games, it's not just campaign games, it's not just whatever. Like, we always do different things.
Yeah. No samesies. On the same topic, do you consider your older rule sets as being part of a different era, and you take the knowledge gathered from them to design the new ones? Or are they some sort of living documents to be revisited in the future?
Well, for a while, they were literally like color-coded eras. Because you used to do things in green and then blue. I think blue was before green. Then it became yellow and orange. That's kind of stuck with me. So in that way, yeah, you can look at this and like, oh, that is from the green period. sometimes I don't want to go back to something because I just did enough time with it and I wouldn't have fun. But most things I do want to like update at some point. There's some technical challenges sometimes to doing that. If it's on a, you know, if it's old documents, like converting stuff from, I got it figured out, but for a while, converting stuff from the old OpenOffice format into something that Apple Pages will work with was a bit of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Yeah, some things I do. I'm a big fan of the living documents thing, but at some point you also get to a point where the game is just kind of done until time has passed and everyone is kind of ready for like a new edition or a new update of it. So yeah, a little bit of both. They are eras that there are certain ideas that were in certain times, and there are certain ideas that, you know, for a long time I didn't do anything with points values, and then, you know, sort of come around to it. That. So yeah, a little bit of eras, a little bit of things to go back to.
Perfect. Stealing from this week's, which was a much previous week.
Yeah.
Trapped Under Plastic episode. What's your favorite game mechanic?
I'm going to say something really banal, but it's actually re-rolling dice. I think there's something really satisfying about rolling and having a shit roll, and then you pick up the dice and you get to try again. And it might be shit, or it might even be more shit, but I just think it's like a fun, like it's very tangible. Like you get to do something physically to like change your luck, right? So anything with re-rolls, I think is really fun.
That's like story points in line. That's what makes them fun.
Yeah. Or even just like a character who has a, like, dudes within 6 inches can re-roll one die or something. Like,
yeah.
Games works have like that kind of stuff. Yeah, I just think it's fun. That one's like rapid fire, I guess.
Sweet. What was your favorite character you ever played in a campaign game? Could be from a miniatures campaign or an RPG. I think the answer would be interesting from either or both. What made that character memorable / enjoyable / fun? What's an example of something you've worked into your games to empower others to have a similar experiences?
So I'm going to cheat a little bit, because while we did play campaigns at the time, this character was not specifically a campaign character, but it was my original Space Marine Librarian when we got into Warhammer 40K. Because I grabbed a model that just looked cool from the gaming store. And it was a dude in Terminator armor. He had a big sword, like a rune sword with like chunks. It was like notched and ragged, and he had like talismans hanging off his armor and stuff. He looked really cool. He had this like really elaborate like storm bolter with like two magazines like on opposite directions. And I thought, like, this guy is so obviously like a Space Marine Librarian. He has, you know, he's decked out with like talismans and stuff, and he has this like mystic space warrior monk look. And then it turned out like later that it was actually like a Chaos Terminator captain. So that model like was my Terminator armor librarian for like forever. And in my head, it just was really cool. Because it was this like very mystical warrior. It just encapsulated what like that character was supposed to be. So that always stuck with me. He never had a name. He was just like my guy. But you know, you remember like in one game he goes toe to toe with like an enemy character, and then in another game he just gets killed instantly and stuff like that. I'm trying not to sneeze here.
Oh, hey, you can mute if you want. Just let it out. Nothing. It's gone.
Yeah, it's got shy. Yeah, it's gonna wait until I middle of answering. As far as like empowering people to have that experience, I think just leaning into as much as possible. The like my dude, you can bring your own models, and you can bring your own like the guys who are like kid bashing a character to abuse in a game. That character will be like really significant and important to them. So I think that actually matters a lot more than like the rules part. If it's a model that you have specifically painted up to be this character.
Yeah. Yeah. Typically when I start Five Prospects Crew, you know, I just choose a bunch of models I like the looks of, and then I roll up some characters and figure out which personalities seem to work best with which model. Yeah. And as you play through, they do build their story and they become important. So
yeah, like
I think it's like kind of integral to a lot of those games where you just, that's what empowers you. They create a story.
Yes, absolutely. Like you have, it's just spending time with a character. Like, but yeah, I think that absolutely fits.
Yeah, like, why is this asshole always fighting people in the hospital? There's one guy who always did that in 5 Parsecs. I don't know why. So he's getting a scrap, and he's, like, in the hospital.
Yeah.
Just relax, dude. All right, here's one that's way out on left field.
All right.
If you were given the powers of the calendar and could add a single new annual special day, like Christmas, New Year's, St. George's, May Day, Pancake Day, International Women's Day, Father's Day, etc., for completely your choice to everyone's calendars, what and when would the day be?
See, that is a kind of weird shit I was hoping for. I would make it International Listen to Music Day. And the day would be like August 12th. Because I don't think, like, August is the month where, like, nothing happens. Nobody likes August. So it would just be a day where everyone would, like, chill out and listen to, like, a good album. Maybe check out a new one, you know. Mm-hmm. Go on. If you're one of those dudes who say that there's no good music anymore, like, the government would come to your house and force you to load up Bandcamp and download, like, some weird indie shit to listen to.
Better yet, tweens. Tweens would force you to.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that would be my day, because music is important and there's so much good shit out there.
All right. Yeah, that's a good one. If you were hired to make a game for a licensed property that they would also make custom minis for, movie, TV show, etc.
Mass Effect.
What would be your first choice?
Mass Effect. However, if I can't say that because 5 Parsecs sort of kind of a little bit, then, because a lot of the, like, obvious ones, like Dune or Aliens, have had games anyway, so I don't really want to do another go of that. And there's one that I can't say because it looks like I might actually get to do it. So a little bit of a deep dive. I don't know, The Black Company, probably, from the fantasy novels. That would probably be pretty cool.
Okay. Fantasy novels called The Black Company.
Yeah, it's I forget the name of the author now. Something Cook. It's like a gritty fantasy novel following, like, a mercenary outfit.
Nice.
So, yeah. They're really cool. They had an RPG, I think. But I think they would do well as a minis game. So, but the real answer is just Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Quake 2.
Oh, yeah.
That's the obvious one. But, yeah. It would be one of those things.
If you were on a desert island, what 3 items would you bring with you to design a game with the knowledge that you could use standard island things as well?
I guess it's like the boring answer is like a stack of index cards, a pen, and a D6, right?
Okay, yeah.
Because you can, like, make some minis out of, like,
coconuts,
crabs and coconut shells.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is probably something like that. It would force you to not use measuring. You could, like, measure, like, all ranges are, like, coconut range in coconut distances. I mean, in a case like that, you're going to have to improvise a bunch of shit. So if you're teaching the crabs to act as your minis, then, yeah, you probably want a pencil, I think, on a jungle island. Or a desert island, your pen is not going to work. But a pencil should work as long as you don't break it.
Yeah. Just got to keep wearing it down.
Yeah. It means you have to be, like, pretty specific with what you're writing out, because you're going to wear out your finite pencil. You might be there for a while.
I think so. Yeah, I think in this one you're going to be there for quite a long time with your standard island things.
Yeah.
All right. This is a 2-part question. Imagine if you could make everyone on Earth have a truly universal experience, like eating, sleeping, etc. And that experience was playing one of your games for one evening. 1, which game would you choose? 2, how would this reshape the course of human development?
All right, well, if everyone, which includes a lot of people who have never played a game before, it probably just has to be Squad Hammer. Because sitting a bunch of dudes down and teaching them to play Renegade Scout or something is probably going to be a pretty brutal experience. So definitely Squad Hammer. And how does it reshape the course of human development? Well, a whole bunch of people we just created, you know, out of like 8 billion people on the planet, there's probably like 300,000 who would play tabletop games if they even knew they existed.
Mm-hmm.
So now, in like villages around like Nigeria and rural places in Appalachia, there are suddenly a whole bunch of gamers that are coming up with their own games. So it spurs a wave of creativity in human development.
Mm. What would be the opposite, though? Because there's always the opposite, right? If you have like, one action, you have a reaction. Yeah, like, so what is this group of people who now hate wargaming? What are they going to do?
Yeah. They're probably going to, it's going to be one of those, like, was there a Rush album about, like, how the government outlawed rock music and Rush had to fight it or something? So it would be like that. They would conclude that, like, tabletop gaming leads to, like, uncontrollable sexual activity or something. Yeah.
We would have, you'd have stylized posters of your face for the revolution.
Yeah. The 2D6 becomes like the sign of like the counter-revolutionary movement or something. I don't know. Yeah. It would be like a rock opera dystopia.
Nice. That's the only real outcome for us, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Do you have any plans to make a space combat game like Full Thrust or Battlefleet Gothic?
Yes. Been discussed with the Overlords. We'll have it at some point. That's all you get for now.
Do you have plans to make an Imperial Airship Engagement game?
No. Regrettably, I cannot stand steampunk and any variation of it, so that probably won't happen. You might get a Victorian sci-fi game. You'll have to be happy with that one. These are rapid-fire questions now.
Yeah. Will you make the Weasel Tech-style jet fighter game we've all been dreaming of?
Maybe. I promised Veritex and Weasel Tech for a long time, so. Yeah, probably.
I guess it's up to the Overlords now, though.
Yes. So, and they may have concerns about things that are a little too close to, especially now that Macross is like regularly available on streaming in the US.
Well, the Transformer Mecha has been around for many things. So.
Yeah.
It's fine. 5 parsec strategy, when?
Good question. We have talked about some sort of big overarching campaign thing that games would tie into. Probably after doing spaceships, because it wouldn't make sense before you can actually do space combat.
Yeah.
So, when? I don't know. But, yeah, could happen.
5 parsecs. The arena expansion. Playing a gladiator's team. Gladiators get fame. Sometimes die. Opposing teams are reoccurring. To a finite pool of teams, skirmishes can happen outside of the arena.
Yeah, I've kicked around. I really want to do like a combat sport thing in like the Parsec setting. There's a couple of different ways to do it. But yeah, that could definitely happen. I think it would work really well. Also a fun like standalone or something that your characters can get involved in. So not for sure, but yeah, it's one I keep returning to.
Hmm. Do you plan other expansions like Bug Hunt for 5 parsecs?
Yes. Don't think I can talk about anything yet, but yes, that will definitely be more like standalone. I assume this means like a standalone game that's like on a specific theme, but yeah, stuff planned.
Is there a WeaselCon?
Nope.
Why not?
Mostly because I'm bad at organizing things, and organizing anything in the United States is really difficult because nobody lives on the same coast.
It would be most fun.
It would. But yeah, at some point it'll happen somehow. It's just a question of somebody who's not me organizing it.
Math adds up. Any sci-fi aerial combat games in the pipeline?
No. yeah, it's just if I was gonna do aerial, it would probably not be sci-fi. I assume aerial here means like sci-fi like fighter planes as opposed to like spaceships. So no, probably not, and I can't say that's something I've super thought about. So probably not.
If you were to make a football tabletop game and could license 10 of any club team, men's and or women's, to make a league, which 10 would you choose? And would game design impact your selection? Or would you build the rules around those teams?
I know exactly who asked that question. When I saw this question first, I was going to cheat and say national teams, but I realized it actually says club teams. I think for it to work and be like commercially viable, it would have to be like a Champions League kind of thing. We pick like the two best teams from like 5 different countries. So you pick the top two teams from England, France, Germany, Holland, and like Zimbabwe or something. They would have to be like the big teams that people are into. So you have to appeal to like the glory hunters and plastics, right? would game design, like, what I would really want to say is, like, oh, okay, yeah, just pick the 8 teams from the Canadian Premier League. But that's a little, nobody would buy that. No. Would game design impact the selection? No, I think the best way to do it would be that the rules would be created first, and then hopefully would account for the, because you're really looking at, like, the style and abilities of different players and teams and stuff. But I think the rules would have to function as a game engine first. Now, I have kicked around doing a football tabletop game, because there are a couple, but none of them are real great, and certainly none of them do what I want. So, but of course, I definitely cannot license, you know, like PSG or whatever. I'm given to believe they want a bigger check than I can write.
Yeah, no, I think so. Even Modiphius doesn't have that kind of clout.
Yeah, and they are definitely not interested in that anyway.
All right. Sports game. What sport would capture the right Nordic Weasel game's essence?
That is an excellent question. I think a lot of sports, actually, because you always have, like, drama between players. Some dude, mm-hmm. like, has a scandal where he, like, does something stupid. Players get into fights. Like, all of that could be turned into. I think something that would be fun to do in miniature would actually be hockey, whether it was, like, a real hockey or it was, like, a fantasy, like, version of it. But, you know, something that has, like, fast movement in fast complex movement and ways for players to interact with each other and stuff like that. So, and a league format, which makes it, like, perfectly suited for, like, a gaming club, because you can just, like, play a season or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I would say hockey. For the drama, I think actually boxing is the best. Yeah. But I don't watch enough boxing, and it doesn't interest me, like, quite enough to, like, do something like that. So I think to capture the vibe of, like, a campaign with, like, random elements and character elements, I think a team sport, and yeah, I think hockey would work really well.
And if there's something that would translate well, would you consider making it?
Well, yeah, I always allude to that. Yes, I definitely want to make a football game at some point. Since this is the last question on the list, let's mm-hmm. make one extra minute on it, because I think we're burning out of time fast.
I got one user question as well after. So.
Okay, so I'll keep it short. There are a whole bunch of these, like, sports simulation games. I bought, like, a couple of them on WarGameVault, and they are basically, like, you have, like, a bunch of stats, and you roll dice to see, like, which team wins or which race car wins or whatever. But they're not really, you don't, like, make decisions or anything. They're, at most, you just roll for, like, events that happen during the game. But you don't really, like, they're barely games. They're basically, like, you sit down and replay, like, this particular season of the Tour de France or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I totally get, like, who is into that. But that's not, like, what I want. I would want something that, like, had some actual gameplay.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to do something like that. So I just haven't cracked, like, how, like, I think I know how to do it, but mm-hmm. haven't gotten it quite yet. It would also have to be something where I have enough knowledge to, like, not be a complete idiot about it, which kind of limits it to, like, football.
Yeah. that's why you've been training all these years.
Yeah. Like, it has to be, you know, like, I could probably come up with some game mechanics for, like, Formula One, but then I would look like a complete poser because I have no clue about the sport.
Okay. Well, it's not actually a question, but it's from Tom.
Yeah.
He said, I'd like to see an ultimate Unityverse game, which combined 5 Parsecs, Bug Hunt, Tactics, Planetfall, and Unity Field Agent. Please.
Yeah, some grand unified field theory of Unity Gaming. That's something that the Overlords have actually, we've talked about that. Mm-hmm. But there's, like, I think I mentioned earlier, like, you kind of have to have the spaceship game in there for that to mm-hmm. work. But yeah, like, some sort of, whether it was kind of open-ended, like, it's something you create as a game master, and it's just, like, tools and ideas for, like, running this together, or whether it's something more mechanical where, like, the effects of Bug Hunt games affect, like, how things work and tactics yeah. or whatever. Like, I think you could do it both ways. I don't know which is better. But yeah, we've talked about it. It's sort of like an obvious, you know, once all this stuff exists, somebody's going to think about, like, how to put it together, right?
Yeah. So it's really just the overarching campaign game that ties yeah, everything else together.
Yeah, like, how much of a specific game is it versus how much of a just, you know, a set of guidelines and ideas is it? Like, is yeah. it very open-ended or what? So yeah, it could happen. It's something, it's an obvious idea. So we've talked about it, but just the time isn't quite there yet.
So many things to come still.
Yeah, so my list of independent projects, ideas, I think has like, I'm going to say 40 things on it. Some of which are new editions of things, some of which are random weird ideas. So there's a lot.
Yeah, it's a chunk. 40 chunks.
Yeah.
So, and who knows what else is floating out there in between?
Yeah, I mean, tomorrow I probably have another one. But that usually means something has to go. That kind of brings us to an hour, and that also brings us to the end of the list.
Yeah, which is perfect.
So
perfect timing. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I guess, thank you for the stalwarts who were hanging out in chat, and anyone who's watching this after the fact, if you want to post additional questions in the comments on YouTube, we will make a point of answering those. Also, Ludwig is singing to me. Cat treats.
Aw, beautiful.
Yes, yes. So, I can't resist the siren's call.
Heck no. And I gotta ship my child off, so.
Yeah.
We are going to bid you all a good evening, good day, good morning, if there's anyone in the morning.
Yeah, that might be if they're on, like, Mars time.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So. See you later, Martians. Take care. Yes. Bye-bye.
Peace.
This episode of Bad Internet Friends was streamed live on YouTube and Twitch. There is a North American-friendly live stream every second Wednesday of the month, and a European-friendly live stream every fourth Monday of the month.